Behind the Arc, a look around the country in college basketball. Behind the Arc, hear about the week's biggest storylines, from blue bloods to mid-majors. Go in-depth on the week's biggest matchups, bracketology, and which small conference schools should be on your radar. Behind the Arc, here's your host, Joel Silverberg.
Welcome to the Behind the Arc podcast. I am Joel Silverberg. I appreciate you taking the time to listen to Behind the Arc, whether it's on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, 99.1, thesportsanimal.com, and on the Sports Animal app. Thank you so much for checking out the Behind the Arc podcast. Baylor did it. Baylor beat Gonzaga, ending the Bulldogs' opportunity at a perfect season at the school's first national championship, and in turn, Scott Drew has led the Bears to its first national title in school history after getting Baylor to its first Final Four appearance since 1950, its first final appearance since 1948, and now Baylor is your college basketball, men's basketball national champion. And for Baylor, just a dominant performance from start to finish, 86-70. Baylor scored the first 9 points of the game and never looked back, as it was all Bears for 40 minutes. Gonzaga with a pretty decent run to cut it to a 10-point lead at the half. You felt like the way that Baylor had played in the first half, that Gonzaga should have felt fortunate to be within 10 points, but then Baylor opened things up again, and at one point really blew the game wide open. Gonzaga got to within 9, and you thought, okay, maybe Gonzaga can make a move here. And then just like that, Baylor was able to blow it back out to a 16-point game. And that was the dagger right there, and never really allowed Gonzaga to get back into the game. The final score again, 86-70, and just an unreal domination of what looked like the best team in college basketball the entire season. Gonzaga spent the entire year ranked number one, and Baylor absolutely floored Gonzaga. And I didn't think it was a matter of Gonzaga not being prepared. I just think that Baylor came out and executed at a really high level. Gonzaga shot 51% from the field, but just 5 of 17 from three-point range. Gonzaga was out-rebounded 38-22. Gonzaga with 17 defensive rebounds. Baylor with 16 offensive rebounds. So Baylor just dominating the boards. I had said on Sports 180 with Josh Ward, which you can hear every weekday from 12 to 3 on 99.1, the Sports Animal, that if Gonzaga, for them, one of the biggest keys was going to be controlling the boards and not allowing Baylor to get offensive rebounds and getting second chance points and having those opportunities that lead to kickouts and open threes. And that's exactly what Baylor did. The Bears shot 43% from 3-point range, which was their season average going into this game, or going into the tournament. They were the best three-point shooting team in the country, and it showed again on Monday night. And Baylor finishing 44% from the field overall, but hitting 10 three-pointers and just a monster performance from that entire team. Jared Butler was fantastic, 22 points, 7 assists. Davion Mitchell, 15 points, 6 rebounds, 5 assists. Maceo Teague with 19 points, Mark Vidal with 11 rebounds, 8 of them on the offensive glass, Adam Flagler with 13 points, just an overall strong performance from start to finish. Jonathan Chamwa-Chachua with 6 points, 2 rebounds, and only 16 minutes, found himself in some foul trouble. And that was another thing, when Chamwa-Chachua and Flo Thamba both found themselves in foul trouble early in the second half, Baylor didn't buckle despite having its front court, and that left opportunities open for Drew Timmy. I think the most impressive thing about what Baylor did defensively was that it held Drew Timmy to 7 shots, and he was efficient. He was 5 of 7 for 12 points, 5 rebounds, but for Drew Timmy, also found himself in some foul trouble, still played 33 minutes, but man, they were not able to get him the ball inside enough. And when you take away Drew Timmy to that regard, you will take that if you're Baylor. You would have taken that if you were anybody this season, if you're holding Drew Timmy to just 7 shots. Corey Kispert never really got going, just 2 of 7 from three-point range. Again, Gonzaga 5 of 17 as a team. Andrew Nembhard 0 for 3. Jalen Suggs 2 for 5. Joel Ayayi 0 for 1. Just 5 shots for Ayayi, 5 shots for Nembhard. So Kispert and Suggs doing the bulk of the work offensively, and just nothing there for Gonzaga. So The game's a bit of a letdown, but credit where credit is due to Baylor with how dominant they were against Gonzaga. And I think it's just impressive the way that this Baylor team came out and executed. They were flying all over the court defensively, which I think might have been a little misleading because we've mentioned this stat on the KenPom era. Only one team before this year had won the national championship without being ranked in the top 20 in both offensive and defensive efficiency. That was the UConn team that won it back in 2014 as a 7 seed against Kentucky. That team was ranked outside the top 30 in offensive efficiency. Baylor finishes the year ranked 22nd in defensive efficiency. They were ranked in the top 20 for most of the season. And then after they had that bit of a struggle after the COVID pause, they dropped back a bit. So that statistic might be a little bit misleading, but it goes to show how strong of a defense Baylor has when you consider what it was able to do, just flying all over the floor. Davion Mitchell, just an incredible two-way player, 5 defensive rebounds, had a steal, had a block. Baylor with 5 blocks as a team, forced turnovers early and often against Gonzaga. Gonzaga with 14 turnovers. They had 5 turnovers in the first 8 minutes of the game. They had 10 in 45 minutes in the final four against UCLA. And Baylor took care of the basketball, just 9 turnovers for the Bears. And I think you're looking at one of the most dominant performances in a championship game, especially one this highly anticipated. I had mentioned that it was only the 5th time in history that the 2 preseason top 2 teams in the AP poll met in the national championship game. Well, all 5 times, the number 2 team has won the matchup. So Baylor goes in and dominates. Gonzaga falls short of its first national championship. It had made the Final Four for just the 2nd time in school history, the first since 2017. And Gonzaga still looking for that elusive first national title for Mark Few and company. And for Baylor, you look at what Scott Drew has done. He went from taking over a program that was facing serious sanctions to start off his 3rd year. He had to have open tryouts because of the punishment that his school received. They were limited to conference games only. They finished 4-13 after everything that happened with the Baylor basketball scandal, with the murdering of one teammate to another, and then Dave Bliss, the former head coach, being caught on tape trying to cover up illegal payments that were improper benefits, recruiting violations, so many things that went wrong with the Baylor basketball program. And Scott Drew took over a program, and they played it on the CBS telecast on Monday night of his introductory press conference saying, I didn't come here to go to the NCAA tournament. I came here to win games at the NCAA tournament. And it's been a long and arduous road for Baylor and for Scott Drew. And they've had some tournament disappointments too. Remember the year they were a 5 seed, they ended up getting upset by Yale, the Ivy League champ that year, in a 5-12 upset. You had the post-game press conference with a player sarcastically replying to a reporter, well, you go up and you grab the ball after a missed shot. That's what you call a rebound, in response to the question, how does Yale out-rebound Baylor? And then 1 year, Baylor wins, enters the NCAA tournament as a 3 seed and gets bounced in the first round in a 3-14 upset. So you've just seen so many times where Baylor has been a big tournament disappointment, and for this school to be able to do what it's done, because last year it looked like it was a legitimate contender to make a deep run in the NCAA tournament. And now this season was widely considered one of the top 2 teams in college basketball all year, really the entire offseason. And they lived up to the hype. They lived up to the expectations going into the tournament. I think there were some that kind of wanted to back off on Baylor a little bit, thinking, I don't know, with the COVID pause, like, are they really going to get back to form? Well, they got back to form and they peaked at the right time because they got better and better as the tournament went along. They, cruised by Hartford and got a decent test from Wisconsin. But the reason that Wisconsin was a 9 seed was because that Badgers team had flaws and Baylor overcame those flaws. Then you get a shorthanded Villanova team in the Sweet 16, and so you're wondering, all right, has this team really been tested yet? Then they come out and they really punch Arkansas in the mouth in the first half of the Elite Eight matchup and just destroyed Houston in the Final Four before taking it to Gonzaga in the national championship game. Baylor never trailed in the game and led by 9 points or more for pretty much, at least 36 minutes of the game. And for Gonzaga, just a opportunity where it came out flat. I really don't think it was a matter of, well, they couldn't handle the emotion of coming off that Final Four win with the half-court shot by Jalen Suggs. I really just think it was a matter that Baylor came out and showed Gonzaga some things defensively that it hadn't seen, and it was able to execute against a team that really hadn't been able to have its offense slowed down all season. So Baylor defeats Gonzaga 86-70. Congratulations to the Bears. They are the national champs of the men's college basketball NCAA tournament for the first time in school history. We'll get you caught up on some Tennessee updates, a quick look at next season, who is the early favorite to win the title in 2022. We'll cover all of that coming up on the Behind the Arc podcast. So Tennessee lost one assistant coach already this offseason, with Kim English opting to take the head coaching job at George Mason in the Atlantic 10. And now Tennessee had a second assistant coach take another head coaching job already. On Monday, East Tennessee State announced that Desmond Oliver would be hired as its new basketball coach. So Tennessee now has two coaching vacancies that it had to fill on Monday, and Rick Barnes filled up one of them very quickly by hiring Rod Clark away from Austin Peay. And he had been at Austin Peay for a year. The year before that, he was at Illinois Chicago for a season. And before that, he was one of the top assistant coaches at Sunrise Christian Academy, which Tennessee fans should know that. That's where current Tennessee signee Kennedy Chandler is at, and just finished up his high school season, losing in the Geico National Championship game down in Fort Myers to Montverde Academy. So a pretty good run for Sunrise Christian, by the way. Made the finals of the Montverde Invitational, and then ended up losing in the finals of that, and then losing to Montverde in the national championship game down in Southwest Florida. So Rod Clark replaces one of the two vacancies that Tennessee has had. And for Clark, you know, Sunrise, obviously a really successful prep program. And so the expectation is that Clark would have a lot of connections to some of the top preparatory schools in the country. He played 2 years at Lindsey Wilson College in Kentucky. He has also had a hand in helping develop some fairly notable players: Tyrese Maxey from Kentucky, Isaac Likely, who played for Oklahoma State this past year, Shaq Harrison from Tulsa. And it was Kim English who was primarily responsible for recruiting Kennedy Chandler, but there's still that connection to a pretty strong prep school that Clark might be able to help out with when it comes to being able to add on the recruiting trail and help out Tennessee have to continue what's been a pretty solid recruiting run for Rick Barnes at Tennessee. So congratulations to Desmond Oliver. He was also in the running for the Winthrop job, but the Eagles ended up hiring Western Carolina's Mark Prosser last week, and Desmond Oliver replaces Jason Shea, who resigned last week from ETSU during a bit of backlash from boosters and people within the program about supporting his players who decided to kneel for the national anthem. And so Jason Shea resigns after 1 year after replacing Steve Forbes, and now Desmond Oliver becomes the third coach in as many seasons for the ETSU Bucks, who just won the SoCon championship last season. This year, not the case, but we'll see if Desmond Oliver can kind of get that program up to being a competitive mid-major team within the SoCon region. On the player personnel front, Auburn transfer guard Justin Powell committed to Tennessee over the weekend, so Tennessee getting a little bit of help to replace Keon Johnson and Jaden Springer out of the backcourt. Jaden Springer has officially declared for the NBA draft. Keon Johnson has not made that official quite yet. But the thought is that Keon Johnson is going to go. So I think for Tennessee, this obviously helps. The primary focus is going to be the inside presence, which Rick Barnes has emphasized. We need an inside presence. We've always had an inside presence, and Tennessee's going to need that. But Justin Powell offers Tennessee something that it could kind of help improve upon in the backcourt. And Tennessee has had three-point shooters: Jaden Springer, Santiago Vescovi, Victor Bailey Jr., but it hasn't had consistent threats of being a solid three-point shooting team. That's an area that Tennessee's needed to improve upon Justin Powell could potentially help with that. He's a 6'6 shooting guard, averaging nearly 12 points per game, along with 5 assists and 6 rebounds. So a player that kind of offers the same sort of team-first versatility that Josiah Jordan James offers. Only played in 10 games last season, suffered a concussion on January 2nd, and spent the rest of the season in concussion protocol, and was a 44% three-point shooter last season, and 42% from the field while playing 27.5 minutes per game. So was a former three-star recruit. Justin Powell is somebody that could really help enter into the fold of helping Tennessee with its perimeter offense. And I think that would help Rick Barnes and the Vols greatly. Now the next step, find a forward, whether it's Walker Kessler from North Carolina, whether it's the forward, the former All-Atlantic 10 freshman selection coming out of UMass. There are a lot of options in the transfer portal, but Tennessee's going to need to figure something out, because I don't think it's likely that Eve Pons or John Fulkerson return next season. Tennessee's going to need some bulk on the interior, guys that can score and guys that can help facilitate the inside-out offense that Rick Barnes wants to run. So that's an update on Tennessee hoops. Tennessee, it's already had 2 assistant coaches go take head coaching jobs elsewhere. Rod Clark from Austin Peay comes in to fill one of those voids, and I'm sure Rick Barnes is already well ahead on working on the second coaching vacancy that came open on his staff earlier this week. And then Auburn transfer guard Justin Powell committing to Tennessee over the weekend. We take a quick look at what's coming up in next season. Who is the early betting favorite to win the national title next year? And how could the transfer market dictate all of that? We'll talk about that as we wrap up this edition of the Behind the Arc podcast. So we'll get to the odds on who the favorite is to win the NCAA tournament next season. But first, a couple more coaching changes around the country. Texas Tech obviously having to replace Chris Beard after he took the head coaching job at Texas after Shaka Smart left Texas to take the Marquette job. So Chris Beard, the only coach in Texas Tech history to take the Red Raiders to the Elite Eight, and he did it twice, moves on to go to Texas. So the Red Raiders, they replace him with associate head coach Mark Adams. Now, this will only be the second Division I head coaching job for Adams in his career, and the first since he was the head coach at Texas Pan-American in the 90s. They were a member of the Sun Belt Conference. They only had 2 winning seasons under Adams and only had a winning record in conference play once, and they never finished better than 4th in the Sun Belt. So it's going to be a really big adjustment. Now, he had been with Beard since his coaching days at Arkansas Little Rock and had been with him throughout his entire tenure at Texas Tech, but really just going to be a tough adjustment. And for a program that had never been to the Elite Eight before, Bob Knight had only ever gotten them to the Sweet 16, most recently back in 2005. It's going to kind of ask the question of, okay, is Texas Tech going to continue to be a strong basketball school, or is it going to fade now that Chris Beard is gone? And so that's something that's going to have to be found out. Roy Williams announced his retirement last week. Hubert Davis, has been named as his successor, and he has been an assistant in North Carolina since for 9 seasons, and so now some serious big shoes to fill. You're talking about a Hall of Famer, a guy that was at North Carolina for 18 seasons, so Davis has been there for half of Williams' tenure in Chapel Hill, and of course won 3 national titles, so Davis with some pretty big shoes to fill as he tries to overcome that. Lon Kruger retired from Oklahoma. So now you have Porter Moser going from Loyola of Chicago to Oklahoma to fill in for Kruger. So it should be interesting to see how all of that plays out. For Moser, I thought if he doesn't leave Loyola Chicago this year, he might never leave. He might be in a Mark Few situation where he just stays there, but Porter Moser moving on from Loyola Chicago, going to the Big 12. So the Big 12 with a couple of notable programs that have new head coaches. And now you've got at least 3 new head coaches in the league going into next season. Indiana hired former player Mike Woodson, who played under Bob Knight at Indiana, had more than 2,000 career points, but he's never been a college coach. And so now he comes in having to take over the Indiana Hoosiers job, which That's been a tough place to win because the Big Ten has been so deep and Indiana has not had that elite level of success in a while, and it's a program that believes it should be in that conversation and now trying to get back. So those are just a handful of the notable programs that are having to deal with coaching changes this season. And so looking ahead to next year, even with that loss, Gonzaga opens as the betting favorite for the 2022 NCAA tournament. The Bulldogs at a plus 550 odds. And obviously that's going to depend on who comes back. Jalen Suggs is expected to declare. Baylor is the second betting favorite at 850. We'll see who all is back from the Bears next season. Obviously you've got the extra year of eligibility. You've got transfers that are going to be going all over the place. Other favorites towards the top of the betting board, UCLA at 12-1. UCLA is really interesting because Johnny Juzang has suddenly been projected as a first round pick, but he wasn't really on a lot of draft boards before this tournament. So you kind of wonder, okay, does he decide, well, I need to, you know, if I can't follow this up next year, my stock will fall, or does he decide I'm going to go ahead and jump at this instead of deciding to come back for a year and seeing if I can elevate my status even more? But the rest of that lineup could potentially return, including Chris Smith, who was lost to a torn ACL back in January. Michigan at 14-1, Duke at 15-1, Kansas at 18-1, along with Kentucky and Florida State at those same odds. So it's going to be very different with the transfers, and that's something that William Hill Sportsbook had told ESPN, that, you know, the typical 50-1 long shots might be reduced to 35-1 to protect the house while offering favorites with a bit more enticing odds. So it's going to be a little bit different. We'll see how it all plays out with everything happening with transfers in college basketball. But Gonzaga and Baylor, just like they were this year, the top two betting favorites to win the national championship in 2022, those odds could look very, very different by the time we even get to summer, let alone the start of the college basketball season in the late fall. So the season is over. Baylor has won the national championship, beating Gonzaga 86-70. It's been a fun season. We'll continue to have updates here as Tennessee looks for a new assistant coach. It looks for new players to help fill in on the transfer market and so much more. We'll keep you updated on draft declarations and all of that. Thank you so much for listening this year. It's been a lot of fun. We're not done with the Behind the Arc podcast. We will have updates, probably going to drop to once a week as opposed to two or three times a week as we go through the season that way. But it's been a lot of fun doing this. We finally got to have a tournament to talk about because our first season doing this last year, we didn't have an NCAA tournament. So thank you sincerely to everyone who listened. If you like the podcast, hit that subscribe button on Apple Podcasts, leave a 5-star rating and review, and tell a college basketball fan you know about the Behind the Arc podcast.
Behind the Arc with Joel Silverberg on The Sports Animal.